from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel. Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Luis Robert Jr. He did it again! A 2-run blast. And it's a 5-3 White Sox lead.
That's two different at-bats where Luis just kept spoiling pitches he couldn't handle before finally getting one he could. The Sox have taken a 2-run lead, courtesy of Luis Robert. 2 home runs, 4 driven in.
That man is the best ball player in town. Absolute 5-tool superstar. And one of the big reasons to check in to White Sox games on television, along with our next guest, who is Steve Stone, who joins us here on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run. Good morning, Stoney. How are you?
Pretty good, Spiegs. How's yourself?
Very good, thank you. Happy New Year to you with brand new baseball. Lovely day yesterday. Hope you're enjoying yourself. And boy, the way you talked about the Luis Robert at bats, give us some more on that, what you see from a guy who I think the numbers are 29 pitches he saw in 5 plate appearances yesterday.
No, I think he's made a determination that if he just swings at strikes, he's going to be very difficult to retire. And you saw it yesterday where he couldn't handle certain pitches, but he was able just to get a piece. And eventually in a 10-pitch at bat, he wound up hitting the ball out of the ballpark when finally the pitcher made a mistake. And that's usually what happens if you keep fouling off 3-2 pitches. Eventually, you're going to get one to your liking, hopefully one you can handle. And when Luis gets one he can handle, as you can see, he can hit it a long way. So it's a pleasure to watch him. It's wonderful to watch him defend in center field. And then when he does come to bat, it's almost like must-see viewing. If you're going to go to the concession stands, go after or before, but watch the Luis Robert Jr. at bat.
Yeah, I think the Twitter robot that tells you Luis Robert is at the plate would be a very helpful thing for Sox fans and otherwise. He said after the game, Stoney, quote, "I was doing a specific drill during the offseason, just focusing on one quadrant of the strike zone. If the pitch is not there, don't try to swing at pitches that aren't there. I worked a lot on that." Sounds simple. But boy, that's one of the hardest things to do for a batter, isn't it?
Well, it certainly helps if you have the talent to, when you get your pitch, actually hit it hard. And I remember this conversation, and I'm sure you remember a long ago shortstop for the Cubs by the name of Sean Dunston, who was around for quite some time. And we were flying out to the West Coast, and he said to me, "You know what? I swing at the same pitches that Andre Dawson swings at. We have the same strike zone, which is basically nose to toes, and swing at whatever you want to swing at." He said, "Well, why is he so much better hitter than I am?" I said, "Because unlike you, when he gets a mistake, he hits it really hard. You get a mistake, you foul it back. That's the difference between you two. That's why Andre's going to the Hall of Fame, and you're going to make a lot of money as an everyday shortstop. But stop a little bit before those numbers." So, yeah, and that's usually what happens when you get a hitter that has the talent of Luis Robert Jr. When you do finally make a mistake in an at-bat, there's a very good chance he's going to hit it hard. Now, you don't anticipate he's going to hit everything out of the ballpark. Last year he hit 38 of them. This year he'll hit more than that if he stays together and stays healthy. But he is, you know, he's the guy in this lineup that you have to a game plan around. And you get to the point, and it's going to get this way, where if the game is on the line and Luis comes up, they're just not going to pitch to him. Then it's going to be up to him to have the discipline to lay off those pitches, because they're not all going to be strikes. Eventually, they're going to start to try to get him out of the strike zone, and then be content to walk him if that happens. And so, you know, we know he can steal a base, so he can help the team in a lot of different ways.
It's a great instructive story on Dunston, and you're right. You know, that thought from you that, like, the mistakes have to be hammered, or the opportunities have to be hammered. I want to check in on a couple of veterans who I'm watching closely because their contracts are big and because it's kind of the final year for them to be able to prove something. And I don't want to overreact to stuff, but I do want to ask you about a specific moment for Yoan Moncada. And it's the 3-1 fastball that he gets in the ninth with Robert on deck. And I'm thinking, oh man, 3-1, he's got the count. He knows he's getting one. He's going to walk it off. He's going to walk it off right here. And it wasn't a bad swing. It's a fly ball to center field, but that's like one of those moments where I'm like, man, that's your moment right there. Cause they don't want to face Robert. They know they're going to challenge. What'd you think of that moment, that pitch, and how does Yoan look overall at this point to you?
Well, I think overall he looks really good. Quite obviously, in the last year of your contract, you're going to show whatever it is you have, because he makes quite a bit of money, and he certainly doesn't want to go down appreciably from there when the contract does come up, which it will after this season. So I would anticipate, assuming that he does stay healthy, and he has all the incentive in the world to do that in this the final year of his contract, that he's going to have a pretty big year. But it depends on, with him as much as anybody else, probably more than most, it depends on how that back is going to act up or not act up. And if it doesn't, he's got some skills. He can play.
Am I overreacting to that 3-1 fastball, that opportunity that's right there?
Well, look, I mean, he knows he's pretty much assured that a fastball is coming. He just didn't get to it. So on that particular pitch, he got beat. But hopefully getting better pitches with Luis Robert behind him, he will see a lot of fastballs that he can jump on.
Yeah, and that's one more fastball than I've ever faced in the big leagues at this point. That's for sure. And then Eloy Jimenez, I couldn't tell from the replays, was he running full throttle on the double play to end the seventh inning? Big moment there, and I was kind of surprised that it was doubled up quite as easily as it was.
Well, I mean, it turned out to be a really good pick on the back end by Torkelson, because that throw was well in the dirt. Those are not easy to handle. And Torkelson had some big problems defensively a couple years ago. He worked on it last year. He became better. What we've seen in the early going this year is he's even better than he was last year. So that was the one part of his game that really needed some work, and apparently has worked on it, because he looks a whole lot better defensively now than he did before.
And how does Eloy look overall, what you've gotten to see in spring and so far?
Well, he looks really good. And sometimes, unfortunately, if you get a little anxious in a situation like he did, you wind up topping the ball, and then nobody scores on that play. So I think, again, he's another guy that has had challenges staying healthy. When he stays healthy, he's pretty destructive. I mean, he's a really, really good hitter and a very powerful hitter. So I look forward to a full season from him if we can get that. And those are the two guys in the middle that are going to make this offense go or not go.
Jordan Leisure, Steven Wilson, John Brebbia. We all got to take a look at those three guys yesterday. Does Michael Kopech get the first save situation when it arrives, Stoney?
Well, I think what Pedro has said, Speaks, is that he's going to play every game by ear. In other words, he's not going to go with any preconceived notions. And that means that the ball automatically goes to Michael Kopech at the end, or automatically goes to Brebbia or Knebel when he comes back. It's going to be one of those, okay, what's the situation dictating? Is it going to be a very tough inning? If it's going to be a tough inning and it's loaded with right-hand hitters, Kopech might be that guy, might be the sixth, might be the seventh inning. I don't think at this point Pedro is ready to name him as a closer. He has never really been a closer. So they want to wait and see how this thing pans out. And, you know, yesterday, a few guys out of the bullpen looked really good. A couple guys didn't. That's kind of what happens with bullpens. But unfortunately, the Tigers were a bit better in their pen than our boys were last night.
Stoney, what's the difference between the mental ask of starting every 5 days and maybe the mental ask of, here you go, could be the seventh, could be the eighth, could be the ninth, for Michael, who's got all the stuff in the world, as we know? What's the difference in the mental ask?
Well, the difference is you don't get a for sure type of rhythm in your preparation. When you're a starting pitcher and you're starting every 5 days, you get a real good idea what you do the day after you start, what you do the next day, which is usually your side pitching day, and how you get your arm back and ready to go so that 5 days from now you're going to be strong enough to go into the seventh inning, hopefully. But when you're a reliever, it's a whole different world. And until you get that pattern down, it's a difficult mental adjustment as opposed to a physical adjustment, which it's one of those also. But that's the biggest difference between a starting pitcher and the routines you can build up as a starter and the relievers who have to be ready to go each and every day. It's a different mindset. It's a different indoctrination. You have to have a different way to prepare for an outing on a given day because you don't have any off days per se. It's different, and it is a mental adjustment. And I think Michael is capable of doing that, and hopefully he can rediscover what he's been missing as far as the bullpen is concerned. I root for him. I think he's a really good guy, and I hope that he's able to straighten this out. And the Sox certainly do, because that's a very valuable arm they have. And now, look, we're at the point in his career especially where all this potential has to translate into performance. If he can do that, if we can get a good inning or two out of him on occasion, then he becomes a very valuable member of that bullpen. And the first thing, Speaks, that has to happen is acceptance. When you talk about the transition between a starter and a reliever, you have to accept that role. You cannot excel at a role until you accept it. And I think he has accepted the plight of a pensman, at least for the beginning of the year. Doesn't mean he'll be there all year. It just means that's where he happens to be now.
God, it's just, it could be, if you allow it, to be such an ego blow, right? It's like the veteran quarterback, like Ryan Tannehill last year, is like, okay, now I'm a backup. Let me deal with that. Yeah. Or we just talked to Garrett Cooper from the Cubs. He's like, well, I'll be ready if Michael Bush ever needs a day off. That's a former All-Star. It's like, this is sports. Those adjustments come and you have to deal with it.
Well, you do, especially as you go through the aging process, because as you know, Father Time is undefeated and untied. Mm-hmm. And so it's a game of attrition, always has been. You're going to lose certain things on a yearly basis, especially as you cross that 30-year-old barrier. And nature and Father Time is going to take things away from you. Then you have to readjust and gather them back again. And a lot of times it is a mental approach. That's something that you're going to do differently. Sometimes it's a very, very much of a physical endeavor, but it's a game of adjustment, always has been. And if you're not adjusting, then you're leaving the league. You're going someplace else and doing something else, but you have to adjust, because the guys with astonishing talent, they make up maybe 5% of the major leaguers, and 5% of the guys are interchangeable in the minor leagues. And that leaves 90% in the middle. And a reason why you compete at the top end of the 90% or the bottom end sits squarely on your shoulders. How you can harness the mental processes to get yourself better.
Couple more minutes here with Steve Stone on Hit and Run. I'm really looking forward to watching Eric Fetty today. I've followed the story. We've seen guys come from the Korean League when they figured something out. And if you figure something out, it can be legit. Tell the listeners what to expect with Eric Fetty today.
Well, first of all, you're going to get a guy who's coming off a season where he built a whole lot of confidence. You win the MVP. I don't care what league you're in. You're doing a pretty good job of it. He won 20 games. I think he was 20-6, something along those lines. But we're going to see a guy who has tried to make the adjustment from what he was when he first came up with Washington, because he was one of those guys that was really highly thought of. The stuff was very good. He strung together some really good runs as a starter and then fell on some hard times. So now he's trying to rediscover it. And I agree with you and feel the same way. I want to go out and watch him today, break down everything that he does, and then see where he is as far as his path back to an everyday major league starting pitcher. We saw some good points in the spring. We'll see what he's got as far as today brings. But I think the weatherman is going to cooperate, which is really nice. And by the way, yesterday we had over 28,000 out there, which was a pretty nice crowd. So, hopefully the fans will give this team a chance. I know at 0-2, it doesn't look great, but it still is 0-2. There's a team on the other side of town, by the way, that's 0-2. So you can turn this thing around. There's 160 games left.
Would you like to mention the Illini loss as well, in a grim day for Chicago sports?
They did have a grim day. However, they faced a pretty good basketball team.
It seems like
usually you go on a 30-0 run, you're usually going to win that game. That's just me. I mean, that's like a rule of thumb. When you outscore your opponent 30-0 in any run during the game, odds are overwhelming you're going to win.
Yeah, that was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. The 30-0 run for a team. UConn, Stoney, as we morph into pick and roll briefly from hit and run, UConn has a winning margin in this tournament of 29 points per game. That's the average. Last year, they won all six games to win the title with an average margin of 20. They're outrageous. So, you know.
Yeah, look, you got to bring your A game, and you can't have a bad night if you've played them, because they're pretty good.
Yeah. How are you enjoying working with John Schriffen? How's it going so far?
Well, look, I had a really interesting spring training with him. The season has started off not as we wanted to, but he's got a lot of enthusiasm. I think he's going to be a very good broadcaster. And it was kind of interesting because Jason Benetti comes into the booth yesterday and says to John, "Hey man, I'm sorry to have to put you through that." You know, the picture on the scoreboard waving to the fans and everything else. And John said, "Well, look, that's no big deal. It's one of those things. You're coming here for the first time, so." Anyway, I thought it was kind of interesting that he apologized for putting him through what could have been but wasn't an awkward moment. So I think we'll get through this first series and welcome Atlanta to town and bid Jason adieu.
That's cool of Jason to go in and say that, because it's a tough spot for John. Everybody knows it's a tough spot for John. How is it for you as a partner in those moments to have Jason and Schriffen standing right there with you?
Well, look, I've broadcast with a whole lot of people at this point. Jason and I had a really strong 8 years together, and now he moves on. And one of the things that I keep reading about, which is the one kind of misnomer about this entire thing, is that Jerry forced out Jason. That was not the case. Jason asked to search elsewhere. He had 1 year left on his contract, and Jerry said, fine. He basically did him a favor, because he didn't have to. He didn't have to give him the right to negotiate someplace. But he views Jason as doing a wonderful job when he was here, and figured that, you know, if he wanted to go someplace else, let him explore it. So that was set about by Jason asking Jerry to let him out of his contract, and he did. And I'm one of those guys that I wish him all the luck in the world. I think he's going to go on to get the Ford Frick Award somewhere down the line. Jason is that good a broadcaster. And like everything else, you turn to what you have at this point, and now it's John and I. And we both know that we're just occupying this chair until someone else takes it. And that's kind of the way this business works.
So it's an understandable clarification that Jason asked out, and he has said that as well. I guess the thought process that I hear from the listeners, Stoney, is that it's unfortunate that Jason felt the need to ask out. You know what I mean? There's like an overall comfort that forced him to want to consider it. What would you say to that thought process?
Well, look, I mean, everybody has a different viewpoint of what they handle on a daily basis, but everybody has bosses. You have a boss. I have a few of them. There's a number of bosses around. If you don't own your own business, you have bosses. And those bosses get to, if not dictate what's going to happen, they oversee your employment. And somewhere along the line, you know, you have to realize that unless you want to buy your own television station or your own baseball team, odds are overwhelming you're going to have to please some people who act as your bosses at the various times. And, you know, for Jason, again, he had a wonderful run here, and he's going to have a great run because he's a great broadcaster. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, hopefully he'll find what he was looking for in Detroit. I know most of the people that have associated with him wish him well. I certainly am one of those guys that wish him well. And so, you know, we'll have to see how it plays out. In the meantime, this was an opportunity that I think right around 100 people actually explored the idea of getting this particular job that went to John Schriffen. But this was a very desirable job to get. And a lot of people, just about everybody I ever worked with, called me up and say, hey, what do you think? I said, call Brooks Boyer. He's the guy that's making the decision. So that's kind of exactly how this worked out.
Steve Stone, thanks for the time. And we'll do it again here on a Sunday morning. I'm looking forward to it. Appreciate it.
I look forward to it, Steve. Take care. And hopefully there'll be some better Sox times when we do.
Thank you so much, Steve. That's Steve Stone right there on 670 The Score. Yeah, interesting stuff. Look, phone lines are open for the next hour or so. I've got a ton of stuff that I want to do, a ton of stuff from around the league I want to do. Later on, I'm going to give you my team of the moment around MLB. I'm looking forward to that. I want to talk about the effort and courage off the field for some of the game's biggest stars that should be praised, and that includes a local, so we'll do some of that. But the phone lines are also open. If you want to talk White Sox, you want to talk Cubs and Ben Brown and the pitching situation and Justin Steele's injury, we can do that. And if you want to talk about some of the broadcasting stuff that Stoney just went to, you're welcome to do that as well. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
You know it? Virgil Trucks.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
And the pitch hit in the air down the left field line toward the wall. It's gone! It went over the high wall. Juan Soto's first home run as a Yankee. A fly ball down the left field line. There is a Soto photo. A home run in the left field seats. He's wonderful. Marvelous. And the Yankees have now taken a 4-3 lead.
Oh, wow. I'm so glad to hear that. It's wonderful, it's marvelous, you should care for me. Is that Cole Porter? Is that who that is? No, it's probably Gershwin. I think it's the Gershwin brothers. But goodness, that's a hell of a song, and that's where John Sterling goes. That's for you guys. That's for the octogenarians out there. And me, I suppose. I mean, I don't know how many people know the Gershwin. I guess there's modern versions, but a Soto photo. It's wonderful. Yeah, this has worked out so far for the Yankees. Juan Soto threw out the potential tying run to end the game in his first game. And then he homered right there to give the Yankees a lead that I believe they would hold on to as I go running to the standings, the all-important standings. Yeah, the Yankees are 3-0. Great. That's not my team of the moment, though. We'll get there a little bit later on. But Juan Soto, that has worked out just fine so far for the Yankees, although they gave up a lot. Let's take some of your phone calls. A lot of things I want to get to, but your calls always a big part of the execution of the program. Here is Bobby in Oak Park on 670 The Score. What's up, Bobby? Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Speaks. Teeing me up there with the Juan Soto topic, because that's actually exactly what made me call, you know. You started the show talking about your disdain for the Dodgers, spending the big money. And, you know, after the Illini got beat, I'm watching the Yankees and Astros and just started marveling at the absurdity that Juan Soto was just available, that anyone could go get Juan Soto and there weren't 25 to 30 teams knocking down the Padres' door to go get them. Yeah, he's going to work out pretty fine for the Yankees, I think. And, you know, looking at the team I root for, the Cubs, I wish they were in the market for him, a team on the margins the way the Cubs are. 182 games last year at their 83 games. Not being in the mix for some of these guys, you know, counting on, you know, the people like Michael Busch to step up. I wish the Cubs were a little more emphatic with what they did to improve the team this offseason. And, you know, as the game started, I felt like calling you up because you follow the hot stove and you look at the contracts and the money and then the game starts and you think, wow, you know, Jordan Montgomery, JD Martinez, Blake Snell, they'd be pretty good guys to have, you know, albeit you got to pay them a few extra million on a 1-year deal, you know, so.
I hear you, Bobby. I love JD Martinez. It's just that the way his his profile is as just a straight DH makes it difficult unless they had deferred. I'm not sure why they didn't entertain the idea of deferring. You know, the Mets are deferring money on J.D. Martinez, but it's still going to end up costing them around $19 million, considering the present-day value of the deal and the payroll and the luxury tax hit. But, like, he could have squeezed that one in. But, again, there's no positional flexibility there. But Matt Chapman has two home runs already for San Francisco. If I'm going to look at a position player and wonder why on the shorter deals they didn't do that, it makes me want to see Matt Shaw pretty early in this here season to not see Matt Chapman entertained. And I'm not saying I was pushing for it all off season because I wasn't. I was a little freaked out by Chapman's last 4.5 months in Toronto, which were awful. And we'll see how the whole year plays out and the slight decay of his defense. But at the short-term deal that the Giants ended up getting him, just wasn't a possibility. On trading for Soto, I'm not really having remorse on that because you got to look at what was given up. The Yankees gave up 5 players to get Soto and Trent Grisham. And among the players they gave up were Michael King, who was a rotation piece immediately for the Padres, a viable rotation piece that the Yankees were excited about. And also Drew Thorpe, who ends up being a headliner of the Dylan Cease trade, and I think will be a viable piece for the White Sox rotation for a few years, or very soon for maybe a long time. I'm a big fan of Drew Thorpe. So that's two extremely high-end pitchers for 1 year of Soto when, you know, the Cubs were not going to pay him, and I don't even know if the Yankees are necessarily. So that one doesn't give me as much remorse, I must admit. Let's go back to the phone lines. Ron is on the south side on 670 The Score. Ron, tell me about your White Sox after a couple of games.
Okay, well, you know, two players I want to mention, Speaks, I've been mentioning this on The Score, Andrew Benn and Teddy. Speaks, I know he's not going to probably hit 14, 15 home runs anymore. His thing in value is getting on base. And, you know, we talked about Moncada, but it's just so important for him hitting in front of Moncada and Luis Robert. I'm just concerned, Speak, that this contract, boy, and it's for 4 more years, I believe. So I'm watching him. And also Andrew Vaughn, 20 home runs last year in 80. Got to get a little better in that number 5. Spot, but I'm looking forward to today's game because you've been talking about Fetty, but I'm really looking forward to Drew Thorpe. But Speed, what I'm really looking forward to is beginning tomorrow to see, I believe, going to be the most exciting player in baseball, Michael Harris Jr. Huh. And the year before, he was Rookie of the Year, but last year he was kind of limited from some injuries, but to me, hands down, and all the stars on the Braves, I just can't wait to see him. So, and hope Fetty gives a good performance for Speed, because I got really interested in him from listening to you. So, have a good day, Speed.
Hey, Ron, thanks, man. Appreciate all the calls and the interaction. Yeah, I'm interested to see Fetty. Fetty worked out with Logan Webb for the past few off seasons. That's the great Giants pitcher who finished, I think, second in Cy Young voting last year. And they worked out together with Brian Bannister, who is now here. And Fetty has added some of the same stuff that Logan Webb added over the past few off seasons that has made him what he is. Michael Harris is an absolute stud on a team full of studs in Atlanta. In 2 games so far, Michael Harris has a couple RBIs, he's got a homer, he's got a double, he's got 6 hits already. Oh, boy. Yeah, he's good. They got a bunch of those guys. Jack is in Wilmette. And now Jack is on 670 The Score as we talk Hit and Run. Happy Easter to everyone, to those who celebrate. What's up, Jack?
Hey, Speaks. How you doing?
God, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. You know, I think everybody's a little cavalier about what's going on with this Cub pitching staff. You've lost the number 1 and 2 guy. You've got the professor who for 2 years hasn't gone 3 or 4 innings. He doesn't get to the third time around. they kill him in the second time around. He's washed up. So you tell me where the pitching staff is. They could actually be out of this race by the end of April because they can't win 8-7 and 9-8 games. I mean, you want to tell me about the Japanese pitcher and you want to tell me about somebody else? You don't have any clue if these guys are any good.
I disagree about Jordan Wicks. We saw a pretty good sample of Jordan Wicks. And I also disagree about Shota Imanaga. So why don't you give him one go through the rotation? I understand your frustration, Jack, but you need those two guys to be real good. And I'm a believer in both of them for different reasons that I've discussed. But look, Hendricks last year had a bounce back year. The ERA was 3.74 in 137 innings. That is a fully acceptable representation of like a number four starter. Maybe even a three on some teams, but of a four. Expecting him to be what he was when he won a freaking ERA title in 2016, not going to happen. But if this is him bouncing back after surgery and 2 years of the ERA in the high fours, it's going to be survivable. The steel injury is absolutely devastating. Absolutely devastating. And you hope it's not the death blow. Because of their first 10 series, 7 of them are against really good, if not great, legit playoff contenders. So it's scary. Game on, Craig Counsell. Game on. What do you got? Here you are. Give him anything and everything he asks for from within the system that's available. I don't know if it went, can I have Brown instead of Wisniewski? But if it did go that way, I'm glad he got it. But game on, man. What do you got? Because you got to play to win now. I don't know that you can win the division in April, goes the maxim, but you can lose the division in April. But I'm really looking at these first 60. I mean, there is serious pressure on them to make sure that nobody runs away here in this division. And it shouldn't be the case that they do. Because there's lots of average within this division. But yeah, game on, Craig Counsell. You're getting paid big money. You've been here 5 months and change. What you got? Show us that the Cubs can win some games because of you. 312-644-6767. Let's go to Jack in Hillside. Jack, you are on 670 The Score on Hit and Run. Good morning.
Good morning, Speaks. Thanks for being here. I wasn't aware too much. I'm a big radio listener that you do this on Sundays, and I've been enjoying it. Thanks a lot.
Of course.
And I would like to say that, generally people can't get two or three people to agree on anything, but there seems to be like unanimous opinion that the White Sox can't win even 75 games. So I thought I'd give you a reason why I at least see reason for hope, if not optimism, okay? That, and I think people give lip service to certain things, and I think one is, oh, better defense. You got to be strong up the middle. Well, the fact of the matter is, Sox had zero baseball IQ coming from the captain of their the infield, Tim Anderson. The catching was awful. I think the changing, not just guys have better range, better, you know, defensive players. They're just way going to be completely different, and they already look way better defensively. It's a complete night and day to me. And I think they're hitters. You know, we are. Ron's right. Andrew Benintendi, you know, I think he's a real key, and I'm not too worried about him. He looks fine. He's got to get into a rhythm. If he would get on base, I think they can score enough runs. So I'm not so worried about them being competitive.
Look at you, Jack. Look at you. The positive thoughts, the good vibes. Baseball season is here. It's sunny outside. Jack wants to watch ball games and enjoy himself. You go, sir. Enjoy yourself on this fine, fine Easter Sunday. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on 670 The Score on Hit and Run. More of your calls, and I got to praise some big young stars in MLB for working as hard as they have on something off the field. We'll talk about that next on The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Hey, bada 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 bada, so we bada. Hey, bada 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 bada, so we bada. Kennedy, 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 so we bada.
On 670 The Score.
What are your goals for this season, Luis?
For me, I want to play more game. I'm happy the team win.
All right, and a lot of new players, a new feeling in the clubhouse. What is this team capable of doing this year?
Play hard every day. Let's go.
That is Luis Robert doing an interview in English for the first time publicly with Chuck Garfine on the White Sox television broadcast. Good for him. Man's been in the bigs for a while and wants to be, obviously, a higher profile star, like they all do, but also wants to be comfortable. Wants to be comfortable, wants to express himself. I wonder if he could speak English well, how much better it would have been the thing from early last year where he didn't run hard and, you know, forgot the name of a coach, ended up being a bad moment. I wonder if any regrets on that pushed him a little towards it. And look, it can be a slightly tricky thing to talk about, because here's the deal. I don't begrudge anybody with a language barrier. It's crazy difficult. I am lucky to have lived in this country forever and never had the need to try and assimilate. I know how difficult it is. But if you're able to, if you have the aptitude for it and you are driven to do it, I applaud learning the English because it will make you more relatable. It'll help you be in control and express yourself. And it will do a bunch of other things as well. It's interesting, like, you know, through the years, I've read so many different players talking about what they wanted to do, why they did it. I mean, David Peralta is now in the Cubs minor leagues, right? Was talking about he was dating and he wanted to say to an English speaking woman, "Hey, what's up, girl?" You know, he forced himself to do that, right? You know, some of these guys have wanted to get their food order correct, you know, with people and not depend on somebody else to translate. There can be a lot of different reasons you want it to happen. And certainly relatability with the public is a big one. But just being able to deal with your life in America, and it's so difficult. Good for Luis Robert and good for one of the great young players in the sport, the Cincinnati Reds' Ellie De La Cruz, Mr. Excitement, an unbelievably incredible electric player who before the season began did his first press conference ever in English.
Yeah, it's so important to me because now you guys understand what I say, and it's important to the fans to understand me and me understand the fans. And I put a lot of work on my English to talk with you guys, and I think I'm doing a good job. That's what I think. I don't know.
I can vouch for it.
Yeah, I don't know.
How did you work on it?
I practice every day talking with the other guys, and I just talk with them, and I just let it go. I like talk with American guys because I create confidence.
So Jorge wasn't?
Hey, I don't need him no more.
Yeah, he doesn't.
he wasn't doing the job?
Yeah, he was doing the job, but.
Yeah, I can leave. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. But he helped me a lot, a lot.
That's Ellie De La Cruz in there. He's saying he doesn't need the interpreter anymore. What a great personality to now get to know and get to hear. You know, for a sport that has a difficulty sometimes marketing its stars, that dude hits it hard. He runs incredibly fast. He's got an absolute cannon, and he's super bold and aggressive and confident, and now fans will get to know him even more. So, I mean, I just think that's awesome. 312-644-6767. We've got lineups and details to give you on both ball games that are happening later on today for the locals. We'll get there as part of our next segment at the top of the hour. But for now, we go back to the phone line. Stan from Bellwood is on the score. Good morning, Stan. What's happening?
Hey, Steve. How are you, buddy?
I am wonderful.
Hey, listen, that was
Good on Ellie Dela Cruz. My first impressions when I heard him, you know, last week was that he was much easier to understand than Ozzy. So I'm happy for him. Good for him.
A TV job must be next. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Hey, first things first, though, Speaks. I wanted to extend condolences on the recent loss and passing of Tommy Williams. It made me very sad when I heard the news. I always enjoyed listening to Tommy. He knew his stuff. He made me laugh. And hearing that news brought back some very warm memories of the early days of the Score. I don't know where the time has gone, but that was just very, very, very terrible news to hear. And as Steve Stone said, Father Time remains undefeated. That's you know, that's a shame.
Agreed. Okay. Agreed. And had a chance to speak about Tommy this week, and I'm glad that I did. But yeah, go ahead, Stan. Move on here.
Yeah. You always learn something new listening to Hit and Run and Matt Spiegel. Virgil Trucks, a name from way out of the past. I'll tell you something, Spiegel. If he was the hardest thrower that Ted Williams ever faced, mm-hmm. That's very telling. Yep. And it confirms my beliefs that if it happened before 1947, it's counterfeit. Because I've never heard Virgil Trucks's name in any discussion about, you know, being one of the hardest throwers or best pitchers of all time. So that was very interesting. When you quoted Ted Williams, that was very surprising to me. I mean, you didn't even say Bob Feller or Herb Score. He said, yeah, Virgil Trucks. So
105 miles an hour on an old Army radar gun at one point for Virgil Trucks is the legend. But I hear you. Before 47, I mean, you know, you're talking about a lot of players who didn't get counted, obviously.
Hey, Speaks, the White Sox, let me say this. I'm a pessimist. I don't have any optimism or expectations for this year. But credit where it's due, the pitching has been surprisingly good. Crochet was outstanding. Soroka, very good. The bullpen, pretty good. I don't know where the offense is going to come from. If Luis Roberts doesn't do it, then it ain't going to happen. The bottom half of that lineup, from DeJong on down, Pilar, Nicky Lopez, Maldonado, they are not only automatic outs. There's just no production there at all. They don't get on base. They don't manufacture runs. They don't produce runs. The White Sox last year were one of the most anemic offenses in all of baseball. I think they were like 29 or 30 in MLB, and they're worse than that this year. So I don't know what the amount of runs that they were underwater last year, but they're going to make a run at that this year. I don't know where the offense is going to come from. So, but
thank you, Stan.
I will say this to remain positive on Easter Sunday. The pitching so far, surprisingly good, and I'm happy to see it.
There you go. Thank you, Stan. Have a great day. White Sox last year, 29th in offense at 641 runs, ahead of only the Oakland Athletics. But last year, at least they were 30th in defense. You know what I mean? So at least you had that going for you. They're going to be better on defense, but I do not know exactly where the runs are going to come from, other than Luis and a little Moncada and some Eloy. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run. Let's take a look around the league a little bit. I've got a team of the moment for you. I have an early MVP nomination and the return of a song that I've been wanting to use on Hit and Run again. I'm very glad to be welcoming that back in. And you've got lineups coming for both the Cubs and the Sox. Why would you go anywhere else? Latest on Ohtani and Betts at 11:25 on Hit and Run on The Score.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
A great workout deserves a great reward. Treat yourself right with new coconut smoothie bowls made with fresh fruit, purely Elizabeth granola, and now creamy coconut. You earned it. Grab a treat you can feel good about only at Smoothie King.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Luis Robert Jr., he did it again! A two-run blast. And it's a 5-3 White Sox lead.
That's two different at-bats where Luis just kept spoiling pitches he couldn't handle before finally getting one he could. The Sox have taken a two-run lead, courtesy of Luis Robert. Two home runs, four driven in.
That man is the best ball player in town. Absolute five-tool superstar. And one of the big reasons to check in to White Sox games on television, along with our next guest, who is Steve Stone, who joins us here on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Matt Spiegler with you on Hit and Run. Good morning, Stoney. How are you?
Pretty good, Spiegs. How's yourself?
Very good, thank you. Happy New Year to you with brand new baseball. Lovely day yesterday. Hope you're enjoying yourself. And boy, the way you talked about the Luis Robert at bats, give us some more on that, what you see from a guy who I think the numbers are 29 pitches he saw in five plate appearances yesterday.
No, I think he's made a determination that if he just swings at strikes, he's going to be very difficult to retire. And you saw it yesterday where he couldn't handle certain pitches, but he was able just to get a piece. And eventually in a 10-pitch at bat, he wound up hitting the ball out of the ballpark when finally the pitcher made a mistake. And that's usually what happens if you keep fouling off 3-2 pitches. Eventually, you're going to get one to your liking, hopefully one you can handle. And when Luis gets one he can handle, as you can see, he can hit it a long way. So it's a pleasure to watch him. It's wonderful to watch him defend in center field. And then when he does come to bat, it's almost like must-see viewing. If you're going to go to the concession stands, go after or before, but watch the Luis Robert Jr. at bat.
Yeah, I think the Twitter robot that tells you Luis Robert is at the plate would be a very helpful thing for Sox fans and otherwise. He said after the game, Stoney, quote, "I was doing a specific drill during the offseason, just focusing on one quadrant of the strike zone. If the pitch is not there, don't try to swing at pitches that aren't there. I worked a lot on that." Sounds simple. But boy, that's one of the hardest things to do for a batter, isn't it?
Well, it certainly helps if you have the talent to, when you get your pitch, actually hit it hard. And I remember this conversation, and I'm sure you remember a long ago shortstop for the Cubs by the name of Sean Dunstan, who was around for quite some time. And we were flying out to the West Coast, and he said to me, "You know what? I swing at the same pitches that Andre Dawson swings at. We have the same strike zone, which is basically nose to toes and swing at whatever you want to swing at." He said, "Well, why is he so much better hitter than I am?" I said, "Because unlike you, when he gets a mistake, he hits it really hard. You get a mistake, you foul it back. That's the difference between you two. That's why Andre's going to the Hall of Fame, and you're going to make a lot of money as an everyday shortstop, but stop a little bit before those numbers. So, yeah, and that's usually what happens when you get a hitter that has the talent of Luis Robert Jr. When you do finally make a mistake in an at-bat, there's a very good chance he's going to hit it hard. Now, you don't anticipate he's going to hit everything out of the ballpark. Last year, he hit 38 of them. This year, he'll hit more than that if he stays together and stays healthy. But he is, you know, he's the guy in this lineup that you have to a game plan around. And you get to the point, and it's going to get this way, where if the game is on the line and Luis comes up, they're just not going to pitch to him. Then it's going to be up to him to have the discipline to lay off those pitches, because they're not all going to be strikes. Eventually, they're going to start to try to get him out of the strike zone, and then be content to walk him if that happens. And so, you know, we know he can steal a base, so he can help the team in a lot of different ways.
It's a great instructive story on Dunston, and you're right. You know, that thought from you that, like, the mistakes have to be hammered or the opportunities have to be hammered. I want to check in on a couple of veterans who I'm watching closely because their contracts are big and because it's kind of the final year for them to be able to prove something. And I don't want to overreact to stuff, but I do want to ask you about a specific moment for Yoan Moncada. And it's the 3-1 fastball that he gets in the ninth with Robert on deck. And I'm thinking, oh man, 3-1, he's got the count. He knows he's getting one. He's going to walk it off. He's going to walk it off right here. And it wasn't a bad swing. It's a fly ball to center field, but that's like one of those moments where I'm like, man, that's your moment right there. Cause they don't want to face Robert. They know they're going to challenge. What'd you think of that moment, that pitch, and how does Yoan look overall at this point to you?
Well, I think overall he looks really good. Quite obviously, in the last year of your contract, you're going to show whatever it is you have, because he makes quite a bit of money, and he certainly doesn't want to go down appreciably from there when the contract does come up, which it will after this season. So I would anticipate, assuming that he does stay healthy, and he has all the incentive in the world to do that in this the final year of his contract, that he's going to have a pretty big year. But it depends on, with him as much as anybody else, probably more than most, it depends on how that back is going to act up or not act up. And if it doesn't, he's got some skills. He can play.
Am I overreacting to that 3-1 fastball, that opportunity that's right there?
Well, look, I mean, he knows he's pretty much assured that a fastball is coming. He just didn't get to it. So on that particular pitch, he got beat. But hopefully getting better pitches with Luis Robert behind him, he will see a lot of fastballs that he can jump on.
Yeah, and that's one more fastball than I've ever faced in the big leagues at this point. That's for sure. And then Eloy Jimenez, I couldn't tell from the replays, was he running full throttle on the double play to end the seventh inning? Big moment there, and I was kind of surprised that it was doubled up quite as easily as it was.
Well, I mean, it turned out to be a really good pick on the back end by Torkelson, because that throw was well in the dirt. Those are not easy to handle. And Torkelson had some big problems defensively a couple years ago. He worked on it last year. He became better. What we've seen in the early going this year is he's even better than he was last year. So that was the one part of his game that really needed some work, and apparently has worked on it because he looks a whole lot better defensively now than he did before.
And how does Eloy look overall, what you've gotten to see in spring and so far?
Well, he looks really good. And sometimes, unfortunately, if you get a little anxious in a situation like he did, you wind up topping the ball, and then nobody scores on that play. So I think, again, he's another guy that has had challenges staying healthy. When he stays healthy, he's pretty destructive. I mean, he's a really, really good hitter and a very powerful hitter. So I look forward to a full season from him if we can get that. And those are the two guys in the middle that are going to make this offense go or not go.
Jordan Leisure, Steven Wilson, John Brebbia. We all got to take a look at those three guys yesterday. Does Michael Kopech get the first save situation when it arrives, Stoney?
Well, I think what Pedro has said, Speaks, is that he's going to play every game by ear. In other words, he's not going to go with any preconceived notions. And that means that the ball automatically goes to Michael Kopech at the end, or automatically goes to Brebbia or Knable when he comes back. It's going to be one of those, okay, what's the situation dictating? Is it going to be a very tough inning? if it's going to be a tough inning and it's loaded with right-hand hitters, Kopech might be that guy, might be the sixth, might be the seventh inning. I don't think at this point Pedro is ready to name him as a closer. He has never really been a closer. So they want to wait and see how this thing pans out. And, you know, yesterday a few guys out of the bullpen looked really good. A couple guys didn't. That's kind of what happens with bullpens. But unfortunately, the Tigers were a bit better in their pen than our boys were last night.
Stoney, what's the difference between the mental ask of starting every 5 days and maybe the mental ask of, here you go, could be the seventh, could be the eighth, could be the ninth, for Michael, who's got all the stuff in the world, as we know? What's the difference in the mental ask?
Well, the difference is you don't get a for sure type of rhythm in your preparation. When you're a starting pitcher and you're starting every 5 days, you get a real good idea what you do the day after you start, what you do the next day, which is usually your side pitching day, and how you get your arm back and ready to go so that 5 days from now you're going to be strong enough to go into the seventh inning, hopefully. But when you're a reliever, it's a whole different world. And until you get that pattern down, it's a difficult mental adjustment as opposed to a physical adjustment, which it's one of those also. But that's the biggest difference between a starting pitcher and the routines you can build up as a starter and the relievers who have to be ready to go each and every day. It's a different mindset. It's a different indoctrination. You have to have a different way to prepare for an outing on a given day because you don't have any off days per se. So, it's different, and it is a mental adjustment. And I think Michael is capable of doing that, and hopefully he can rediscover what he's been missing as far as the bullpen is concerned. I root for him. I think he's a really good guy, and I hope that he's able to straighten this out. And the Sox certainly do because that's a very valuable arm they have. And now, look, we're at the point in his career especially where all this potential has to translate into performance. If he can do that, if we can get a good inning or two out of him on occasion, then he becomes a very valuable member of that bullpen. And the first thing, Speaks, that has to happen is acceptance. When you talk about the transition between a starter and a reliever, you have to accept that role. You cannot excel at a role until you accept it. And I think he has accepted the plight of a pensman, at least for the beginning of the year. Doesn't mean he'll be there all year. It just means that's where he happens to be now.
God, it's just, it could be, if you allow it, to be such an ego blow, right? It's like the veteran quarterback, like Ryan Tannehill last year, is like, okay, now I'm a backup. Let me deal with that. Yeah. Or we just talked to Garrett Cooper from the Cubs. It's like, well, I'll be ready if Michael Bush ever needs a day off. That's a former All-Star. It's like, this is sports. Those adjustments come and you have to deal with it.
Well, you do, especially as you go through the aging process, because as you know, Father Time is undefeated and untied. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to, it's a game of attrition, always has been. You're going to lose certain things on a yearly basis, especially as you cross that 30-year-old barrier. And nature and Father Time is going to take things away from you. Then you have to readjust and gather them back again. And a lot of times it is a mental approach. That's something that you're going to do differently. Sometimes it's a very, very much of a physical endeavor. But it's a game of adjustment, always has been. And if you're not adjusting, then you're leaving the league. You're going someplace else and doing something else. But you have to adjust because the guys with astonishing talent, they make up maybe 5% of the major leaguers. And 5% of the guys are interchangeable in the minor leagues, and that leaves 90% in the middle. And a reason why you compete at the top end of the 90% or the bottom end sits squarely on your shoulders. How you can harness the mental processes to get yourself better.
Couple more minutes here with Steve Stone on Hit and Run. I'm really looking forward to watching Eric Fetty today. I've followed the story. We've seen guys come from the Korean League when they figured something out. And if you figure something out, it can be legit. Tell the listeners what to expect with Eric Fetty today.
Well, first of all, you're going to get a guy who's coming off a season where he built a whole lot of confidence. You win the MVP. I don't care what league you're in. You're doing a pretty good job of it. He won 20 games. I think he was 20-6, something along those lines. But we're going to see a guy who has tried to make the adjustment from what he was when he first came up with Washington, because he was one of those guys that was really highly thought of. The stuff was very good. He strung together some really good runs as a starter and then fell on some hard times. So now he's trying to rediscover it. And I agree with you and feel the same way. I want to go out and watch him today, break down everything that he does, and then see where he is as far as his path back to an everyday major league starting pitcher. We saw some good points in the spring, we'll see what he's got as far as today brings. But I think the weatherman is going to cooperate, which is really nice. And by the way, yesterday we had over 28,000 out there, which was a pretty nice crowd. So, you know, hopefully the fans will give this team a chance. I know at 0-2, it doesn't look great, but it still is 0-2. There's a team on the other side of town, by the way, that's 0-2. So you can turn this thing around. There's 160 games left.
Would you like to mention the Illini loss as well in a grim day for Chicago sports?
They did have a grim day. However, they faced a pretty good basketball team.
It seems like
usually you go on a 30-0 run, you're usually going to win that game. That's just me. I mean, that's like a rule of thumb. When you outscore your opponent 30-0 in any run during the game, odds are overwhelming you're going to win.
Yeah, that was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. The 30-0 run for a team. UConn, Stoney, as we morph into pick and roll briefly from hit and run, UConn has a winning margin in this tournament of 29 points per game. That's the average. Last year, they won all six games to win the title with an average margin of 20. They're outrageous. So, you know.
Yeah, look, you got to bring your A game, and you can't have a bad night if you've played them because they're pretty good.
Yeah. How are you enjoying working with John Schriffen? How's it going so far?
Well, look, I had a really interesting spring training with him. The season has started off not as we wanted to, but he's got a lot of enthusiasm. I think he's going to be a very good broadcaster. And it was kind of interesting because Jason Benetti comes into the booth yesterday and says to John, "Hey man, I'm sorry to have to put you through that." You know, the picture on the scoreboard waving to the fans and everything else. And John said, "Well, look, that's no big deal. It's one of those things. You're coming here for the first time, so." Anyway, I thought it was kind of interesting that he apologized for putting him through what could have been but wasn't an awkward moment. So I think we'll get through this first series and welcome Atlanta to town and bid Jason adieu.
That's cool of Jason to go in and say that, because it's a tough spot for John. Everybody knows it's a tough spot for John. How is it for you as a partner in those moments to have Jason and Schriffen standing right there with you?
Well, look, it's, you know, I broadcast with a whole lot of people at this point. Jason and I had a really strong 8 years together, and now he moves on. And one of the things that I keep reading about, which is the one kind of misnomer about this entire thing, is that Jerry forced out Jason. That was not the case. Jason asked to search elsewhere. He had 1 year left on his contract, and Jerry said, fine. He basically did him a favor because he didn't have to. He didn't have to give him the right to negotiate someplace. But he views Jason as doing a wonderful job when he was here and figured that, you know, if he wanted to go someplace else, let him explore it. So that was set about by Jason asking Jerry to let him out of his contract, and he did. And I'm one of those guys that I wish him all the luck in the world. I think he's going to go on to get the Ford Frick Award somewhere down the line. Jason is that good a broadcaster. And like everything else, you turn to what you have at this point, and now it's John and I. And we both know that we're just occupying this chair until someone else takes it, and that's kind of the way this business works.
So it's an understandable clarification that Jason asked out, and he has said that as well. I guess the thought process that I hear from the listeners, Stoney, is that it's unfortunate that Jason felt the need to ask out. You know what I mean? There's like an overall comfort that forced him to want to consider it. What would you say to that thought process?
Well, look, I mean, everybody has a different viewpoint of what they handle on a daily basis, but everybody has bosses. You have a boss. I have a few of them. There's a number of bosses around. If you don't own your own business, you have bosses. And those bosses get to, if not dictate what's going to happen, they oversee your employment. And somewhere along the line, you know, you have to realize that unless you want to buy your own television station or your own baseball team, odds are overwhelming you're going to have to please some people who act as your bosses at the various times. And, you know, for Jason, again, he had he had a wonderful run here, and he's going to have a great run because he's a great broadcaster. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, hopefully he'll find what he was looking for in Detroit. I know most of the people that have associated with him wish him well. I certainly am one of those guys that wish him well. And so, you know, we'll have to see how it plays out. In the meantime, this was an opportunity that I think right around 100 people actually explored the idea of getting this particular job that went to John Schriffen. But this was a very desirable job to get. And a lot of people, just about everybody I ever worked with, called me up and say, hey, what do you think? I said, call Brooks Boyer. He's the guy that's making the decision. So that's kind of exactly how this worked out.
Steve Stone, thanks for the time. And we'll do it again here on a Sunday morning. I'm looking forward to it. Appreciate it.
I look forward to it, Steve. Take care. And hopefully there'll be some better Sox times when we do.
Thank you so much, Steve. That's Steve Stone right there on 670 The Score. Yeah, interesting stuff. Look, phone lines are open for the next hour or so. I've got a ton of stuff that I want to do, a ton of stuff from around the league I want to do. Later on, I'm going to give you my team of the moment around MLB. I'm looking forward to that. I want to talk about the effort and courage off the field for some of the game's biggest stars that should be praised, and that includes a local, so we'll do some of that. But the phone lines are also open. If you want to talk White Sox, you want to talk Cubs and Ben Brown and the pitching situation and Justin Steele's injury, we can do that. And if you want to talk about some of the broadcasting stuff that Stoney just went to, you're welcome to do that as well. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
You know what? Virgil Trucks.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
And the pitch hit in the air down the left field line toward the wall. It's gone! It went over the high wall. Juan Soto's first home run as a Yankee. A fly ball down the left field line. There is a Soto photo. A home run in the left field seats. He's wonderful. Marvelous. And the Yankees have now taken a 4-3 lead.
Oh, wow. I'm so glad to hear that. It's wonderful, it's marvelous, you should care for me. Is that Cole Porter? Is that who that is? No, it's probably Gershwin. I think it's the Gershwin brothers. But goodness, that's a hell of a song, and that's where John Sterling goes. That's for you guys. That's for the octogenarians out there. And me, I suppose. I mean, I don't know how many people know the Gershwin. I guess there's modern versions, but a Soto photo. It's wonderful. Yeah, this has worked out so far for the Yankees. Juan Soto threw out the potential tying run to end the game in his first game. And then he homered right there to give the Yankees a lead that I believe they would hold on to as I go running to the standings, the all-important standings. Yeah, the Yankees are 3-0. Great. That's not my team of the moment, though. We'll get there a little bit later on. But Juan Soto, that has worked out just fine so far for the Yankees, although they gave up a lot. Let's take some of your phone calls. A lot of things I want to get to, but your calls always a big part of the execution of the program. Here is Bobby in Oak Park on 670 The Score. What's up, Bobby? Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Speaks. Teeing me up there with the Juan Soto topic, because that's actually exactly what made me call, you know. You started the show talking about your disdain for the Dodgers, spending the big money. And, you know, after the Illini got beat, I'm watching the Yankees and Astros and just started marveling at the absurdity that Juan Soto was just available, that anyone could go get Juan Soto and there weren't 25 to 30 teams knocking down the Padres' door to go get them. Yeah, he's going to work out pretty fine for the Yankees, I think. And, you know, looking at the team I root for, the Cubs, I wish they were in the market for him, a team on the margins the way the Cubs are. 182 games last year at their 83 games. Not being in the mix for some of these guys, you know, counting on, you know, the people like Michael Busch to step up. I wish the Cubs were a little more emphatic with what they did to improve the team this offseason. And, you know, as the game started, I felt like calling you up because you follow the hot stove and you look at the contracts and the money and then the game starts and you think, wow, you know, Jordan Montgomery, JD Martinez, Blake Snell, they'd be pretty good guys to have, you know, albeit you got to pay them a few extra million on a 1-year deal, you know, so
I hear you. I hear you, Bobby. I love JD Martinez. It's just that the way his profile is just a straight DH makes it difficult unless they had deferred. I'm not sure why they didn't entertain the idea of deferring. You know, the Mets are deferring money on JD Martinez, but it's still going to end up costing them around $19 million considering the present day value of the deal and the payroll and the luxury tax hit. But like, he could have squeezed that one in. But again, there's no positional flexibility there. But Matt Chapman has two home runs already for San Francisco. If I'm going to look at a position player and wonder why on the shorter deals they didn't do that, it makes me want to see Matt Shaw pretty early in this here season, to not see Matt Chapman entertained. And I'm not saying I was pushing for it all off season because I wasn't. I was a little freaked out by Chapman's last 4.5 months in Toronto, which were awful. And we'll see how the whole year plays out and the slight decay of his defense. But at the short-term deal that the Giants ended up getting him, just wasn't a possibility. On trading for Soto, I'm not really having remorse on that because you got to look at what was given up. The Yankees gave up 5 players to get Soto and Trent Grisham. And among the players they gave up were Michael King, who was a rotation piece immediately for the Padres, a viable rotation piece that the Yankees were excited about. And also Drew Thorpe, who ends up being a headliner of the Dylan Cease trade, and I think will be a viable piece for the White Sox rotation for a few years, or very soon for maybe a long time. I'm a big fan of Drew Thorpe. So that's two extremely high-end pitchers for 1 year of Soto when, you know, the Cubs were not going to pay him, and I don't even know if the Yankees are necessarily. So that one doesn't give me as much remorse, I must admit. Let's go back to the phone lines. Ron is on the south side on 670 The Score. Ron, tell me about your White Sox after a couple of games.
Okay, well, you know, two players I want to mention, Speaking, I've been mentioning this on The Score, Andrew Benn and Teddy. Speaks, I know he's not going to probably hit 14, 15 home runs anymore. His thing in value is getting on base. And, you know, we talked about Mankata, but it's just so important for him hitting in front of Mankata and Luis Robert. I'm just concerned, Speak, that this contract, boy, and it's for 4 more years, I believe. So I'm watching him. And also Andrew Vaughn, 20 home runs last year in 80. Got to get a little better in that number 5 spot. But I'm looking forward to today's game because you've been talking about Fetty. But I'm really looking forward to Drew Thorpe. But Speed, what I'm really looking forward to is beginning tomorrow to see, I believe, going to be the most exciting player in baseball. Michael Harris Jr. Huh. And the year before he was Rookie of the Year, but last year he was kind of limited from some injuries. But to me, hands down, and all the stars on the Braves, I just can't wait to see him. So, and hope Fetty gives a good performance for Speed, because I got really interested in him from listening to you. So have a good day, Speed.
Hey, Ron, thanks, man. Appreciate all the calls and the interaction. Yeah, I'm interested to see Fetty. Fetty worked out with Logan Webb for the past few off seasons. That's the great Giants pitcher who finished, I think, 2nd in Cy Young voting last year. And they worked out together with Brian Bannister, who is now here. And Fetty has added some of the same stuff that Logan Webb added over the past few off seasons that has made him what he is. Michael Harris is an absolute stud on a team full of studs in Atlanta. In 2 games so far, Michael Harris has a couple RBIs, he's got a homer, he's got a double, he's got 6 hits already. Oh boy, yeah, he's good. They got a bunch of those guys. Jack is in Wilmette, and now Jack is on 670 The Score as we talk Hit and Run. Happy Easter to everyone, to those who celebrate. What's up, Jack?
Hey, Speaks, how you doing?
God, I'm good, thank you.
Okay. You know, I think everybody's a little cavalier about what's going on with this Cubs pitching staff. You've lost the number one and two guy. You've got the professor who for 2 years hasn't gone three or four innings. He doesn't get to the third time around. They kill him in the second time around. He's washed up. So you tell me where the pitching staff is. They could actually be out of this race by the end of April because they can't win 8-7 and 9-8 games. I mean, you want to tell me about the Japanese pitcher and you want to tell me about somebody else? You don't have any clue if these guys are any good.
I disagree about Jordan Wicks. We saw a pretty good sample of Jordan Wicks. And I also disagree about Shota Imanaga. So why don't you give him one go through the rotation? I understand your frustration, Jack, but you need those two guys to be real good. And I'm a believer in both of them for different reasons that I've discussed. But look, Hendricks last year had a bounce back year. The ERA was 3.74 in 137 innings. That is a fully acceptable representation of like a number four starter. Maybe even a three on some teams, but of a four. Expecting him to be what he was when he won a freaking ERA title in 2016, not going to happen. But if this is him bouncing back after surgery and 2 years of the ERA in the high fours, it's going to be survivable. The steel injury is absolutely devastating. Absolutely devastating. And you hope it's not the death blow. Because of their first 10 series, 7 of them are against really good, if not great, legit playoff contenders. So it's scary. Game on, Craig Counsell. Game on. What do you got? Here you are. Give him anything and everything he asks for from within the system that's available. I don't know if it went, can I have Brown instead of Wisniewski? But if it did go that way, I'm glad he got it. But game on, man. What do you got? Because you got to play to win now. I don't know that you can win the division in April, goes the maxim, but you can lose the division in April. But I'm really looking at these first 60. I mean, there is serious pressure on them to make sure that nobody runs away here in this division. And it shouldn't be the case that they do. Because there's lots of average within this division. But yeah, game on, Craig Counsell. You're getting paid big money. You've been here 5 months and change. What you got? Show us that the Cubs can win some games because of you. 312-644-6767. Let's go to Jack in Hillside. Jack, you are on 670 The Score on Hit and Run. Good morning.
Good morning, Speaks. Thanks for being here. I wasn't aware too much. I'm a big radio listener that you do this on Sundays, and I've been enjoying it. Thanks a lot.
Of course.
And I would like to say that, generally people can't get two or three people to agree on anything, but there seems to be like unanimous opinion that the White Sox can't win even 75 games. So I thought I'd give you a reason why I at least see reason for hope, if not optimism, okay? That, and I think one thing, people give lip service to certain things, and I think one is, oh, better defense. You got to be strong up the middle. Well, the fact of the matter is, the Sox had zero baseball IQ coming from the captain of their the infield, Tim Anderson. The catching was awful. I think the changing, not just guys have better range, better, you know, defensive players, they're just way going to be completely different. And they already look way better defensively. It's a complete night and day to me. And I think they're hitters. You know, we are. Ron's right. Andrew Benintendi, you know, I think he's a real key. And I'm not too worried about him. He looks fine. He's got to get into a rhythm. If he would get on base, I think they can score enough runs. So I'm not so worried about them being competitive.
Look at you, Jack. Look at you. The positive thoughts, the good vibes. Baseball season is here. It's sunny outside. Jack wants to watch ball games and enjoy himself. You go, sir. Enjoy yourself on this fine, fine Easter Sunday. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on 670 The Score on Hit and Run. More of your calls, and I got to praise some big young stars in MLB for working as hard as they have on something off the field. We'll talk about that next on The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Hey, bada 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 bada, so we bada. Hey, bada 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 bada, so we bada. Kennedy, 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 so we bada.
On 670 The Score.
What are your goals for this season, Luis?
For me, I want to play more game. I'm happy the team win.
All right, and a lot of new players, a new feeling in the clubhouse. What is this team capable of doing this year?
Play hard every day. Let's go.
That is Luis Robert doing an interview in English for the first time publicly with Chuck Garfine on the White Sox television broadcast. Good for him. Man's been in the bigs for a while and wants to be, obviously, a higher profile star, like they all do, but also wants to be comfortable. Wants to be comfortable, wants to express himself. I wonder if he could speak English well, how much better it would have been the thing from early last year where he didn't run hard and, you know, forgot the name of a coach, ended up being a bad moment. I wonder if any regrets on that pushed him a little towards it. And look, it can be a slightly tricky thing to talk about because here's the deal. I don't begrudge anybody with a language barrier. It's crazy difficult. I am lucky to have lived in this country forever and never had the need to try and assimilate. I know how difficult it is. But if you're able to, if you have the aptitude for it and you are driven to do it, I applaud learning the English because it will make you more relatable. It'll help you be in control and express yourself, and it will do a bunch of other things as well. It's interesting, like, you know, through the years I've read it, so many different players talking about what they wanted to do, why they did it. I mean, David Peralta is now in the Cubs minor leagues, right? Was talking about he was dating and he wanted to say to an English speaking woman, "Hey, what's up, girl?" You know, and he forced himself to do that, right? You know, some of these guys have wanted to get their food order correct, you know, with people and not depend on somebody else to translate. There can be a lot of different reasons you want it to happen. And certainly relatability with the public is a big one. But just being able to deal with your life in America, and it's so difficult. Good for Luis Robert and good for one of the great young players in the sport, the Cincinnati Reds, Ellie De La Cruz, Mr. Excitement, an unbelievably incredible electric player who before the season began did his first press conference ever in English.
Yeah, it's so important to me because now you guys understand what I say, and it's important to the fans to understand me and me understand the fans. And I put a lot of work on my English to talk with you guys, and I think I'm doing a good job. That's what I think. I don't know.
I can vouch for it.
Yeah, I don't know.
How did you work on it?
I practice every day talking with the other guys, and I just talk with them, and I just let it go. I like talk with American guys because I create confidence.
So Jorge wasn't?
Hey, I don't need him no more.
Yeah, he doesn't.
He wasn't doing the job?
Yeah, he was doing the job, but.
Yeah, I can leave. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
But he helped me a lot.
That's Ellie De La Cruz, and there he's saying he doesn't need the interpreter anymore. What a great personality to now get to know and get to hear. You know, for a sport that has a difficulty sometimes marketing its stars, that dude hits it hard. He runs incredibly fast. He's got an absolute cannon, and he's super bold and aggressive and confident, and now fans will get to know him even more. So, I mean, I just think that's awesome. 312-644-6767. We've got lineups and details to give you on both ball games that are happening later on today for the locals. We'll get there as part of our next segment at the top of the hour. But for now, we go back to the phone line. Stan from Bellwood is on the score. Good morning, Stan. What's happening?
Hey, Steve. How are you, buddy?
I am wonderful.
Hey, listen, that was good on Ellie De La Cruz. My first impressions when I heard him, you know, last week was that he was much easier to understand than Ozzy. So I'm happy for him. Good for him.
A TV job must be next. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Hey, first things first, though, Speaks. I wanted to extend condolences on the recent loss and passing of Tommy Williams. It made me very sad when I heard the news. I always enjoyed listening to Tommy. He knew his stuff. He made me laugh. And hearing that news brought back some very warm memories of the early days of the score. I don't know where the time has gone, but that was just very, very, very terrible news to hear. And as Steve Stone said, Father Time remains undefeated. That's that's a shame.
Agreed. Okay. Agreed. And had a chance to speak about Tommy this week, and I'm glad that I did. But yeah, go ahead, Stan. Move on here.
Yeah. You always learn something new listening to Hit and Run and Matt Spiegel. Virgil Trucks, a name from way out of the past. I'll tell you something, Speaks. If he was the hardest thrower that Ted Williams ever faced, mm-hmm. That's very telling. Yeah. And it confirms my beliefs that if it happened before 1947, it's counterfeit. Because I've never heard Virgil Trucks' name in any discussion about, you know, being one of the hardest throwers there or best pitchers of all time. So that was very interesting. When you quoted Ted Williams, that was very surprising to me. I mean, he didn't even say Bob Feller or Herb Score. He said Virgil Trucks. So
105 miles an hour on an old Army radar gun at one point for Virgil Trucks is the legend. But I hear you. Before 47, I mean, you know, you're talking about a lot of players who didn't get counted, obviously.
Hey, Speaks, the White Sox, let me say this. I'm a pessimist. I don't have any optimism or expectations for this year. But credit where it's due, the pitching has been surprisingly good. Crochet was outstanding. Soroka, very good. The bullpen, pretty good. I don't know where the offense is going to come from. If Luis Roberts doesn't do it, then it ain't going to happen. The bottom half of that lineup, from DeJong on down, Pilar, Nicky Lopez, Maldonado, they are not only automatic outs. There's just no production there at all. They don't get on base. They don't manufacture runs. They don't produce runs. The White Sox last year were one of the most anemic offenses in all of baseball. I think they were like 29 or 30 in MLB, and they're worse than that this year. So I don't know what amount of runs that they were underwater last year, but they're going to make a run at that this year. I don't know where the offense is going to come from. So, but
thank you, Stan.
I will say this to remain positive on Easter Sunday. The pitching so far, surprisingly good, and I'm happy to see it.
There you go. Thank you, Stan. Have a great day. White Sox last year, 29th in offense at 641 runs, ahead of only the Oakland Athletics. But last year, at least they were 30th in defense. You know what I mean? So at least you had that going for you. They're going to be better on defense, but I do not know exactly where the runs are going to come from other than Luis and a little Moncada and some Eloy. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run. Let's take a look around the league a little bit. I've got a team of the moment for you. I have an early MVP nomination and the return of a song that I've been wanting to use on Hit and Run again. I'm very glad to be welcoming that back in. And you've got lineups coming for both the Cubs and the Sox. Why would you go anywhere else? Latest on Ohtani and Betts at 11:25 on Hit and Run on The Score.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.